If you're expecting Barry White to start singing, sorry to disappoint you. Barry White is a little out of our price range. In fact, there's no vocals. It's just me, John DeSavino, your host for today's episode of Short Story Today. Welcome to this special holiday episode of Short Story Today. We're calling this a Valentine's Day microfiction sampler. Inside the box, you'll find 13 delectable little nuggets of short fiction, some by emerging writers and a couple who are quite well known in the world of short stories. We're grateful to Steve Almond and Pamela Painter for kindly allowing us to use their stories in this episode. The other 11 stories were chosen from contest entries. We'd like to thank everyone who submitted stories to the contest. We received a lot of wonderful stuff, but there were just too many to be able to fit all of them into the program today. The other people I would like to thank are the voice actors who have generously volunteered their time to create these masterful little recordings. They're all highly regarded in the world of entertainment, and I'm fortunate to know them. They are, in alphabetical order, Allison Fraser, Barrett Letty, Suzanne Savoy, and Meg Sewell. And I'll be reading a few as well. Before we begin, I feel it's important to explain that the stories you're about to hear are not your grandmother's Valentine's Day kind of love stories. It's not going to be a pretty red satin heart box of chocolates with a velvet ribbon kind of Valentine's program. If you came expecting to hear that, well, now's your chance to bail or to adjust your expectations. While there's no need to mention trigger warnings, it's not all milk chocolate in the box. There's some dark stuff in there, too, maybe even approaching the bitter flavor profile. But I think you'll find all of it pretty tasty. So grab a flute of champagne or Martinelli's, sit back, and enjoy these literary bonbons.
A Valentine's Day with Angie by Carrie Esposito. Wes was a scientist, a rational man, so he knew it was silly to dim the lights, play the Valentine's playlist he'd curated, pour two glasses of the Merlot he'd been saving. But who was there to see him? No one, except the series of codes and images he'd christened Angela. He opened his laptop, took a sip of his wine, pushed the other glass toward her.
I got your favorite, Angela.
Oh, Wes, how kind of you. Wes was most proud of her voice, smooth, not the least robotic. He'd made her a real woman, too. Slightly frazzled curls, a chap to her pink lips, eyebrows off kilter, if you looked closely. He turned up the music.
Do you like this one, Angie?
She giggled. Like she did every time he used her nickname.
I like this one, Wes.
Wes knew all the arguments about consciousness in AIs, how they could mimic human emotions, but ultimately not feel any of them. Angela didn't have a soul. Except in some ways she did, because she had Wes's soul. And what was love if not the living of someone's soul inside you? Wes chuckled at himself. If only the guys at the lab knew. They'd make jokes about what he was really doing with his bot. But Wes would never cheapen Angela like that.
Would you like more wine, Angela?
I am not real, Wes. Wes had programmed her to say this periodically, so he didn't believe too strongly in what he'd created. But the effect of the declaration was wearing off.
the realm of dreams and imagination. Wasn't there life there, too? Life more vivid and tender sometimes than anything in the so-called real world. Angie, Wes whispered, because he loved so to hear that giggle tinkling into the silence. A sort of proof.
Transitioning Home by Sarah Barnett. I do a double take when I see him outside the village store next to the pub. There's something familiar. Each time I visit home, it's further transformed. Memories papered over. Even my old school has been knocked down, alumni forgotten. He's the past. Brianna. The one with the exotic name. The one who sucked lollipops provocatively and looked at me funny. The one I was afraid to be with, the clever one. The one who wore a tux to the prom. I'll remember you, he says. Suddenly I'm talking, small talk, prattling, avoiding. I come back to visit Mum. No, she's not too well, you know, dementia. Till my words lose traction. And I ask, Brianna? I'm Brad now. I understand. Brianna is transformed. Brianna is happy. I ask why she left so abruptly, yet the words, I tried to find you, remain locked in. He tells me how Brianna travelled but couldn't find herself. She found Brad instead. Came home when no one remembered. I nod to the pub. Fancy a drink? He smiles, and my heart collapses like it did every day at school, when my love was coiled in a closet, unspent. We duck under wooden beams, sit in a quiet corner, sip cool draft beers. He tells me he remembers. Daniel. The one with the common name. The one who chewed gum with an attitude and looked at him funny. The one whose love letters he never sent. The one who pretended not to be clever. The one who wore a tux to the prom. I'm Daniela now, I say. I wish I'd been braver then. I would have worn a prom dress and been your date. We laugh. Eyes, hands connect. Our fingers tease and embrace. I think about moving back home.
Evoyeurs Valentines by Reed Cook. A faded sonogram. A gently used curette, a funeral wreath of wilted lilies, the anthology with my poem torn out, the house key once hidden inside a garden gnome, a video cassette of you urinating in the empty living room of our old house, which never became a home. Figs I dare not eat. A sheet of Friedensreich Hundertwasser stamps, freshly licked onto January's water bill. A Polaroid of your hysterectomy scar. A handwritten note asking if I've kept all these dreadful things. The comfort of knowing that I will never be alone, and that we will never be apart.
Prostrate by Sean Ennis. In the dream, she fell from a ladder a few stories, a tall ladder. I did not see the impact and assumed someone would call 911. Not me. I got the heck out of there. I was guilty of something, or at least feeling guilty. The next night, returned to the same dream. She is bruised, in a cast, limping, scabbed, but had been too dazed from the fall to realize that I abandoned her. We are back in good standings, even kissing. There is nothing to forgive. Awake, and for the past few weeks, I have forgotten to be handsome, but it's not like my wife has a device to see what I'm dreaming. It's not like I can control these things, the brain chemistry. I've been losing weight to the metaphorical cancer in me. I have figurative diabetes, literal bad breath. I have been unkind, so I'm baking her favorite. I'm dropping off the recycling at the substation. I'm studying her wish list. I was, what? A jerk. A whole bouquet of orchids won't save me. Does she dream violence for me? Or even crueler, apathy? She is a black box, even after all these years. I touch her broad back at night. I whisper a joke she's liked before.
Why you should never read women's magazines to find love or a prom date. By Amy Marquez. 1. Girls don't want dates with you. Trust me, I've been pondering it since third grade. 2. Decent jobs don't make you attractive. Server at Den's burger joint. She turned vegan. 3. Shared history doesn't bring you closer. I was 8, okay? I pushed the merry-go-round to make it spin faster because rockets are supposed to be fast and yelled, "Blast off!" And she tried to jump while riding the rocket and tripped on her stupid astronaut costume with the two big boots and fell off. And I was running so fast and clinging to the bars that I ran over her. Literally. It's been 9 whole years, and she still raises one eyebrow whenever anyone uses that word. Literally. I think it's the most traumatic thing to ever happen to her. I wonder if it'll be the theme of her college essay. Literally run over. 4. Time doesn't make love go away. She was my best friend. Still is, even though we don't really talk anymore. I wish we talked. 5. Daydreams don't really come true. I stopped walking past the merry-go-round in the playground on my way home from school because I drive now, and it's an awkward detour, and because I'm old enough to know she'll never be there waiting for my apology. Addendum. Daydreams come true. My car was in the shop. She works there. I walked home. She said her dress would be Milky Way colored. And did I want to join her for prom?
Stop by Steve Almond. Or maybe you're here in Sturbridge, Mass, off the pike, punching the register. Roy Rogers, a girl in a brown smock. America comes at you on buses, in caps and shorts, fuming. What the hell, you're killing each other anyway, this kind of loneliness. What are words? You've got chores, duties, an inanimate world that needs you. Sometimes, late afternoon, you scrape the grill and figure, this could be love. this clean violence, the meaty shavings, and steel beneath. There are other ideas out there, in magazines and movies. Sweaters, perfume, barrels of beautiful money. But you see your life, that which persists, the dumpster out back, the counter dulled by your hands, relish troughs to fill. Some days the clouds are so thick they seem weighted. You are kind and not especially pretty. You do your job. You are polite. At great expense, you smile. Your best friend died just down the road, in an accident at night. You laid a pink bear before the marker. And you persisted. You persist.
The Girl I Met at the Gay Bar by Melissa Lannis Brownlee. There's a girl I met at the gay bar who wasn't gay. She came with an exotic dance group, her nervousness. She was a bubble I wanted to pierce. I watched her from the corner as she danced along the bar in a velvet blue bikini, her leg hitting a straight dude in the head as she misjudged how high she needed to lift it. The guy laughed, stuffing a dollar in her bottom, his hand cupping her ass. She kept dancing, moving on to the next person. There's a girl I met at the gay bar who sang like the devil on karaoke night, her voice flaying me open. When my song came on, she stopped talking to the drag queen next to her. Her body swayed, and I knew I'd ask her out. There's a girl I met at the gay bar who brought me to meet her friends. She called me her boyfriend. I didn't really mind, but I could see they didn't believe her because my oversized blazer and baggy dress shirt did not hide my curves. She whispered in my ear, "I don't care what they think," and kissed me in front of them. She left the taste of menthol and tobacco on our tongues. There's a girl I met at the gay bar who moved in with me and told her parents as they were driving to the supermarket that she was gay and that she didn't believe in God. They were more angry about the gay part, pulled the car over, yelled at her to get out and to never come home. She holds me at night, saying, "I choose you," into my neck as she falls asleep, our skin slick with sweat. There's a girl I met at the gay bar who I am going to ask to marry me.
Telemarketer Loneliness by Will Musgrove. Trying to sell me siding for a house I don't own, a telemarketer explains the heating and cooling properties, the energy savings of wrapping your home in quality stuff. And I listen because I know he's not allowed to hang up on me. That when he's done faux marveling at how the strips of layered vinyl will make me the envy of the neighborhood, how the value of my home will soar like King Midas himself had blessed each room, how non-liquid assets are the best investment one can make in this life, I'll ask him how his day's going, hoping he'll do the same. Hoping he'll quit hawking insecurity over the phone then and there. Hoping he'll agree to meet me halfway at a cafe or a restaurant or anywhere where we won't possess any insulating gilded siding, but we'll have each other.
Our Nest is Empty by Andrea Renard. So we sit out back and watch the birds. there are 11 feeders, hung one by one by Jack, who knows that's absolutely too many. We recognize the cardinals and blue jays, the pileated woodpeckers and collared doves. He bought a guidebook and binoculars and murmurs names like poetry. Tufted kingfisher, painted bunting, blue grosbeak. He planted firebush, and we watch for hummingbirds that never stay long enough, leaving an ache in the air where they were. He asks if I heard from the kids today, and he reaches for my hand as we listen for the sounds of wings.
The Petals Left for Me by Leslie Cairns. We whirled around in snow-flecked garage awnings, the underpass making way for travelers from other states, partially or wholly masked. One man defiantly holding the mask on his pinky, as if he was better than all of us. We kissed in the stairway, unbidden. Pandemic lightly unfolding, beginning slush made from starts of blizzards. He kissed my nose. Oh, the first woman I'm dating since I really realized I was gay, I almost say. That's too cliche. So instead, I'm telling you how petals make up the backbone of a wildflower. Indigo protruding stem belly makes up for all the blowing away, the cascaded ruins. If I were whittled down to what keeps me standing, would you still love me? She didn't hear me. Her back echoed to the side of me. We're going to the movie theater. She says, oh, I hope there's that vending machine inside, the one with salty and sour. And sweet, I murmur, and sweet. I hold my dampened woolly mittens. All of a sudden, my world is split, belly up, as if I'm in a field, mountainous and envy green, being asked to stand alone, the sunlight and the bees and the coyote's teeth and the wind carrying me away, until all that's left is the part no one wants to look at, the unpretty kind. The weed that's barely there underneath. Wondering as she turned if she liked me because I was sour or salty, and I told that waiter we would kiss wherever we pleased, thank you very much. I bought her gummy worms, thinking how flowers grow best on top of something with multiple chambers of hearts. Or if, when I kissed her, pearls tapering, I was sweet in the middle. Or if I was enough alone, a late night craving, to really keep and savor.
Never to Come Down
by Bronwyn Griffiths.
Everything thrown up. Never to come down. When I was young, the future beckoned sweet. The world was going to be transformed. Love would save us. All you need is love. At Lena's School of Dance, I performed clumsy pliés and tried to float in a satin tutu. My mother had it in mind to keep me at Lena's forever. She would have liked me frozen in a photograph with my toothy smile like something out of a fairy tale, but I was a bullet moving through space, too fast for her to catch. At 15, I left my ballet classes for the flocked wallpaper and smoky atmosphere of the Spotted Cow. The pub was only a pas de deux from Lena's and close to the new ring road. There my friend and I drank cider and blackcurrant vodkas. There I fell in love with a boy who looked like an angel. Love is all you need. First love, last love. Because at the end of summer, my love flew up in an airplane all the way to Australia. Too fast for me to catch. All you need is love, love. Then the spotted cow was turned into a house, and the cinema, where I had watched Love Story and cried, was demolished, the bricks hammered into dust like my heart. A new building went up where the cinema had once stood. The steelworks became a giant shopping center, and the chain and nail-making shops moved far away, probably to China. The town's heart pulled out. Everything thrown up, never to come down.
After You Told Me You Loved Me by Matthew Kaye. At the end of our pizza date, I drove back home and parked on my driveway. That's when stars began to fall from the sky, and I ate them. The moon's elevator dinged, and I rode it back and forth between my Atlanta home and Halicán, the largest city on the moon. The sky turned into grass, and the grass into sky, and I kicked clouds down my street like soccer balls, screaming, "Goal!" Wolves knocked at my front door, handed me tulips, and I invited them in. We sat on my couch and watched a few episodes of Everybody Loves Raymond while munching on strawberry Pop-Tarts. My neighbor fired a rifle, and jasmine petals shot high into the air in a fragrant white string. Out back, I heard a perfect voice and figured my grandmother was playing her records. But when I opened the screen door, Frank Sinatra stood tall, spotlighted by the blue bug zapper. He sang Summer Wind, my grandmother's favorite. When he finished, I asked him if he could sing it again, but this time in Tagalog. He winked and obliged and began, "Ang hanging tagaraway uma hip." I pulled up a chair, grabbed another bite of star, and listened intently.
Your Letter in an Envelope in the Mail by Pamela Painter. I never expected to see your handwriting again, but I'd recognize it anywhere, even after all these years. A short letter, but it is oddly all still there. The frenetic, unpredictable hodgepodge of printing and script. The narcissism of the ornate capital letters, except for your lazy disinclination to flow with the capital F when a demonstrably intelligent right angle will do. The jovial belly of the lowercase f. The fat loops of the lowercase g, q, j, p, and y, spreading exuberance, chatting up the line below. The ungenerous rendering of contained vowels, the dots of the I off and off elsewhere, your emphatic crossed T's mirroring the dash of all those mad dashes, the parsimonious H, more like a T and needing a revised stroke to provide its rounded tummy. Oh, you revised. And now, in spite of the way we parted years ago, tell me when and where. No, write me a note, another note with date and time and place. If I am still affected by your hand, I'll come.
A Valentine's Date with Angie and The Petals Left for Me were read by Suzanne Savoy. Transitioning Home and Never to Come Down were read by Allison Fraser. Why You Should Never Read Women's Magazines to Find Love, The Girl I Met at the Gay Bar, Our Nest is Empty, and Your Letter in an Envelope were read by Meg Sewell. Prostrate and Telemarketer Loneliness were read by Barrett Letty. And A Voyeur's Valentine's, Stop, and After You Told Me You Loved Me were read by me. I'd like to thank Gene Tignacci for editing the individual stories. I'd like to thank my intern, Mara Benaway, for her help. And thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode. We'll see you soon.